Welcome to Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network. We are live every Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time now.
Hey.
Due to daylight shifting time last week.
Hey, guys, be sure to check us out on Facebook and like our page at facebook.com/voluntaryvalues. And make sure to check out our website at voluntaryvalues.com. And you can find all of our episodes listed at voluntaryvalues.podomatic.com.
And be sure, if you are listening live, you can always watch the webcam and chat with Emberly. The webcam is on the front page of lrn.fm. And we've got some very interesting information that some of it happened earlier in the week and some has been going on for a while. The DEA says that they will still be enforcing federal marijuana laws, despite the fact that a couple of states have actually legalized marijuana.
Right. So there's an article on the Huffington Post from the 15th of October, and it says that on a Monday teleconference call, former DEA administrators and directors of the Office of National Drug Control Policy voiced a strong reminder to the U.S. Department of Justice that even if voters in Colorado, Oregon, and Washington pass ballot measures to legalize marijuana use for adults and tax its sale, the legalization of marijuana still violates federal law, and the passage of these measures could trigger a quote-unquote constitutional showdown.
Yeah, and the feds always like to pull the supremacy clause out whenever state law goes against federal law. But the whole point of the supremacy clause was basically to say that if there isn't a state law, then this is what the federal law will be.
Right.
You know, the nullification was, you know, basically practiced to say, hey, the feds have overstepped their grounds.
Right, and the state laws, you know, fill in the void of federal laws. That was the whole setup, that federal laws were only supposed to be put into effect for things that affected the entire country, correct?
Right.
And the states could do what they...
Interstate commerce.
Right, things that would violate certain rights between states.
Right, you know, so obviously if marijuana is illegal in Oregon, which it is because Oregon failed to pass their initiative, but it's legal in Washington, then there could be federal laws on transporting between states.
Right.
Or even if Oregon and Washington both had it legal, there could still be a federal law about transporting between states. But
right.
The federal laws on, you know, this is illegal regardless of what state law says, it's totally unconstitutional and illegal.
Right. Well, you know, the federal government wants to stick its nose into every little possible thing that they can. And they want to tell states, I mean, it goes back to like the drinking laws where, you know, the federal government basically forced states into complying.
Oh,
with,
yeah. Adopting
their,
the 21-year-old
right,
drinking age.
You know, it's basically the federal government wants to force states into complying with their regulations and their laws. Even though states should have the power to, I mean, and I'm an anarchist, so I don't believe the state has power to do anything. But given the situation that we have,
based on the current
right,
setup,
the federal government is overreaching in every way with the drug war. But they make so much money off of the drug war that I don't see them giving
up. But they
spend
so much money on the drug war.
Yeah, but
if you
I believe that they
incarcerating people.
But I think they make way more money off the drug war than they spend, because not really them spending it, it's us paying for it.
All right.
They spend it. We pay for it.
When you say that they make more off of the drug war than they spend, are you including the amount of money that the CIA gets for running cocaine and protecting
mm-hmm.
opium fields? Or are you talking specifically about the asset forfeitures?
I'm talking about all of it combined. I mean, we know the CIA is a drug runner.
Yes.
I mean, if you're a thinking adult, you should know that at this point.
Even if you're not a thinking adult, but you've halfway paid attention since the 80s, you know that.
Right. And they are protecting the opium fields in Afghanistan. We know that. I mean, that there have been articles written about that in some of the major newspapers.
Yeah.
So we know that that is a fact. So they really just want to push people into obeying federal laws. And I think the agenda is to ultimately take away all states' rights and just have federal laws and state laws at
all. There are a bunch of people that, and I'm not even talking about politicians, I'm just talking about regular, average people that don't want state law. We're one country. There should be one set of laws. And it's like, wow. Yeah,
I've heard that argument before. One country, one set of laws. And I can see a point where, yes, you know, it would probably make things a lot easier for everyone.
Laws do you take?
Exactly.
Do you take New York's set of laws to where you can't buy a 20-ounce soda?
Right.
Do you take California's set of laws? Do you take Illinois' set of laws? Or do you take maybe the laws from Colorado?
Right. And therein lies the problem when you have 50, I would say, semi-autonomous states that each have different rules and laws in each, you know, subsection of the state, of the United States.
Ooh, maybe, just maybe we could do what businesses like to do, where they call it the best practices.
Yeah.
Find the best from everywhere and adopt those.
Well, here's my plan. Just do away with all of them and we can just live peacefully with each other.
Right. Well, I guess.
And the best practices would be, you know, don't murder, don't hurt anyone, you know, don't steal from people. Basically, don't violate the non-aggression principle.
If you don't harm anyone else, then
I mean, really,
no victim, no crime.
Do you need any other law or regulation besides, you know, the non-aggression principle, really?
But somebody might do that thing that somebody else doesn't like, and then think about the children.
And I'll just tell them, like I tell my son, here's the world's smallest violin playing just for you.
But, Emberly, somebody somewhere might not be doing things the way that other people want them to do things, and that's why we have government.
That's what's nice about having such a large country that we do have. You know, if you don't like what we're doing here in New Hampshire, then you can go live in Massachusetts.
Canada.
Or you can go to Canada, or you can go to Maine, or you can go back to Florida if that's where you want to go. You can go to Colorado. I mean, you can go where you want to. You can go to another country if you want to. Unlike me, I'm not going
to
tell people.
You can only go
that,
to another country if you have enough money to leave the country.
That's true. You know, there's a lot of countries that have weird extradition. I mean, not extradition, but what is it called when you want to move to another country?
Expatriation.
Expatriation laws. So it's like harder to get into Mexico and live in as American than it is for a Mexican to get here.
It's probably harder to leave America to go to Mexico than
point,
it is to get into Mexico.
I would say definitely it is. So maybe we should just, all go to Mexico. I don't know. What's the answer? I don't know anymore. You know, I want to live
freedom's the answer.
I want to live in a free world where I can go where I choose and where other people can go where they choose. You know, and that's one nice thing. At least we do have within the United States anyway. We don't have to have a passport to go within the United States. So we can move around to different sections of the United States that we want to.
Right.
And that's why I chose to come to New Hampshire. You know, so that I could be with people that think like me, feel like me, and get involved in activities where I feel good about.
So we'll continue this discussion on marijuana legalization and decrim and medical marijuana. Give us a call, 603-435-1105. Let us know what you think. We'll be back on Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And so far today, we've been talking about marijuana legalization and how the feds don't really like that.
Right.
This past week, voters in Colorado and Washington voted to approve a form of legalization. It's basically regulating marijuana, very similar to how alcohol is regulated.
Right.
And one of the groups that was behind the measure in Colorado is actually called Regulate Marijuana Like Wine. And they're connected to Steve Cubby, who is a well-known marijuana activist. And Emberly, you've been reading an article from Huffington Post.
Right.
If you want to continue.
Okay, so basically, this whole conference call with the DEA and the directors of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, it was basically an attempt to put pressure on Attorney General Eric Holder to make a public statement in opposition to these measures in Colorado, Oregon, and Washington. So it says with less than 30 days before Election Day, the DOJ has yet to announce its enforcement intentions regarding the ballot measures that, if passed, could end marijuana prohibition in each state. All right, so here's Peter Bensinger, the moderator of the call and former administrator of the DEA during President Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, and Ronald Reagan administrations. He began the call and he says, next month in Colorado, Oregon, and Washington states, voters will vote on legalizing marijuana. Federal law, the U.S. Constitution, and Supreme Court decisions say that this cannot be done because federal law preempts state law.
You know, and one thing that I find very interesting about federal drug prohibition is that it took a constitutional amendment to institute alcohol prohibition.
Right.
But yet somehow the Fed, you know, since the passage of the 21st Amendment, which took away federal alcohol prohibition, the feds have sort of given themselves the authority to prohibit other substances.
Right.
Without amending the Constitution.
Right. Well, Bensinger goes on to say, there's a bigger danger that touches every one of us. Legalizing marijuana threatens public health and safety. In states that have legalized medical marijuana, drug driving arrests, accidents, and drug overdose deaths have skyrocketed. Drug treatment admissions are up, and the number of teens using this gateway drug is up dramatically. So here's an example of how, you know, government officials use trumped up, ridiculous statements that equate. Well, because, you know, they have marijuana listed as a Schedule I drug,
right,
up there with all those other pretty nasty,
yeah, drugs
that, you know, are chemically made, that are human made,
yeah,
instead of, you know, a natural plant that grows out of the ground without you and I having to do really anything to it.
As Cat Williams says, it's just a plant. It grows like that. And if you should so happen to set it on fire, there are some side effects. Sleepy, happy, hungry.
Right. And there is nothing that backs up his statements that say, you know, drunk driving arrest,
drug driving
arrests. Well, I mean, I guess if you want to get high and go drive, well, that's just kind of dumb.
Yes.
I wouldn't do it. I don't drink and drive. I'm not going to smoke marijuana and drive. When I smoke marijuana, all I want to do is lay on my couch and talk with my friends and maybe watch a great movie and chill out and relax and sometimes eat a lot.
You know, there was actually one of the candidates running for state rep here in Keene that his sole reason for opposing marijuana is because, I believe it was his brother, some like 20, 30 years, some long time ago, his brother smoked a joint, then drove and got into a car crash. So he makes the connection of his brother got in the car crash because he smoked a joint. So therefore, nobody ever at any time, ever, ever, ever in history should smoke weed and then at some point later in the day go drive a car. So nobody should ever. And he's the same one that
next it'll be cigarettes.
Well, he's the same guy that sent the letter to Toby Islin from Free Minds Radio.
That said
you would make a great snitch, and it's so fun.
That would
to
be
snitch
the guy that
friends.
Just got elected.
Yeah, the one that wants to bring back the firing
What's his
squad.
Name? Burrell or
Delmar Wiener Dog Burridge.
Burridge, that's it. Burridge.
He had a wiener dog on his
speaking
political
of him,
campaign signs.
I saw a post on freekeen.com about the young man that
Will May
that kneeled blindfolded in opposition to Delmar Burridge
for over two hours.
What a brave dude. He did it for five hours. Wow. Thanks, Ian. 5 hours he kneeled on the ground. That's hard to do.
I can't kneel for more than like 5 minutes without my knees and my
right.
back starting to give me
so
a hard time.
So good for him. I mean, that's the way you show your opposition. I mean, that's one of the ways you can show your opposition. And, you know, I'm sure he garnered some interesting comments and who knows, maybe things thrown at him. Who knows with the people, how people react to activists anymore. But good for him.
And that's actually a mix between activism and street theater.
Right. And that's kind of interesting because I know that there's been some talk of doing some street theater here in New Hampshire, specifically in Keene, to maybe get some people involved.
When a demo was still around, he would occasionally go out dressed as Uncle Sam.
Oh, those videos are fantastic.
The Uncle Sam street theater is amazing.
Yes, he's done that all over the country.
Yeah.
Because he did it down in Florida a couple of times. I saw him once, I think it was in Fort Lauderdale, I believe, but I don't remember exactly where.
The first Uncle Sam video that I remember seeing from a demo was during Liberty on Tour. Where Pete and Ademo, I guess Pete was filming and Ademo dressed as Uncle Sam, walks into some guy's backyard during a barbecue and just starts taking burgers.
I saw
and,
that one. That is
like,
a good
chips.
One. Yep.
He's like, this is taxes. These are mine.
Oh, speaking of that, of taking things from people, I watched this hilarious video on YouTube the other day about a guy, and I don't know where it was. It didn't have a whole lot of information, but the guy was trying to teach kids about taxes, and it was like a trunk or treat. And so when the kids came up, he had a bag full of candy, and he would put equal amounts in all the kids' candy. And then he would take some from one kid's, put it in another one, and say, you have more than he does, so we're going to make it equal. And the kids were getting so mad. I mean, some of them started crying. They were so upset. That's not fair. That's not right. You can't take my candy and give it to him. I worked hard for that candy.
That reminds me of something that I saw right around the time of Halloween. Was one of the Sum e-cards that was floating around. You know, it's the little graphics where it's put out by a company, SumeCards.com. I know you've seen them.
I probably have. I'm not recalling.
Showed a parent with a child and said, I'm taking half of your candy. It's called the candy tax.
Lovely.
So, yeah, the feds don't want marijuana legalized. And actually, Obama has increased the drug raids on medical marijuana dispensaries during his presidency. And coming up next segment, we will talk about Assad warning of global apocalyptic war. Welcome back to Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And be sure to go online, watch the webcam, and chat with Emberly. That's on the front page of LRN.fm. And visit the website, voluntaryvalues.com, and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/voluntaryvalues.
Yeah.
And Emberly, you have a story about Syria's President Assad.
Right. So RT did a pretty historic interview. Because this gentleman doesn't give out interviews very often.
And RT is Russia Today.
Russia
for
Today,
that,
right. He did a rare interview with Russia Today, the president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad. And he vigorously clarified his stance on the current Syrian crisis created by the West in some regional states, including Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Qatar, and warned them of the apocalyptic consequences of any foreign intervention in Syria. It was an interesting interview. They're running it on RT.com all weekend. So if you get a chance, and they're running it like 4 and 5, 6 times a day. So if you get a chance to check it out, you know, I would highly suggest it's a good interview. So, but we'll go over the highlights of what he talked about. So, Mr. Assad says, I do not think the West is going to intervene, but if they do so, nobody can tell what is next. I think the price of this foreign invasion, if it happened, is going to be more than the whole world can afford. Assad warned that the domino effect of any military attack on the country will affect the world from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and you know the implication on the rest of the world. He is well aware of what the West and their Arab allies are up to and what kind of scenario they are planning to follow in his country. The Syrian crisis has been dragging on for months now, and a large number of people, including civilians, have been killed. The sabotaging efforts of the West and the financial funding of the insurgents by regional states have not yet borne any fruit whatsoever in helping these antagonistic forces to achieve their goals in Syria.
Okay, now, it's talk like this, based on current U.S. policy, that, you know, basically if anyone prepares to defend themselves from, you know, some sort of invasion, that obviously means that they're belligerent towards the U.S.
Right.
So, you know, his talk of don't invade us or there will be dire consequences, that's obviously code speak for we want to nuke the entire world. Based on, you know, the sort of war hawkish thinking of if you...
The State Department?
If you prepare to defend yourself...
Right.
Then you're obviously, you know, going on the offensive. And well, therefore, we need to go bomb you.
There has been so much rhetoric, you know, thrown at Syria. I mean, who knows really what's going on in Syria? Because you get, I don't know how closely you follow international goings on, but I'm a pretty close follower of what's going on around the world. I'd like to know what's happening. And there has been so much. Nobody knows really who these insurgents or these freedom fighters or who they are in Syria.
Right.
Nobody really knows. And, you know, they don't know. There's all this talk about the Assad regime, you know, attacking civilians, but there's really no proof. You know, nobody knows if it's actually Assad's soldiers, you know, or if it's the Syrian opposition. I mean, and who
claiming
even
claiming to be Assad.
Right. And nobody really knows exactly what's going on. And so I think this is an attempt for him to clarify,
right,
you know, what is happening in his country. Although, you know, I mean, he's got an agenda, obviously. He's the president of Syria.
Of course. You know, everyone to some extent has an agenda.
Right, right.
You know, whether, regardless how unbiased you are trying to be, there's some kind of agenda.
But it's nice to
it
actually...
It might not be as extreme one way right. or the other. But, you know, so, yeah, obviously, you know, he's giving his side of the story. And there's always, you know, the his side, her side, and what really happened
right.
sort of thing. But it just seems to me that, you know, those who like war will find ways to manipulate what he's saying.
Of course.
To twist it and say, this is why we need to go bomb him. And a couple months ago during the presidential campaign, Mitt Romney actually said something about Syria being one of Iran's neighbors and the gateway to the sea. Syria and Iran do not touch one another.
No.
No, so it just showed that people will twist things.
Right. Well,
and manipulate
how many
it.
People actually look at maps anymore? I mean, I have a map. We have a map in our house that's right on my son's bedroom door, you know, and he's always asking me, well, Mom, where is this country? Where is that country? There's the map right there, son. Go look at it. You know, you tell me, like yesterday yeah. he asked me, what is directly south of Mexico? And I said, I don't know. It's one of those.
Belize and Guatemala,
yes,
I do believe.
Turns out it is Belize and Guatemala, and I think a little bit of Honduras touches as well. And, you know, so he had to go over there and look on the map of, you know, what countries do. And you know, I'm no map person, so I don't know them very well.
You're not a mapologist?
I'm not a map file. I need an atlas of the world.
Okay, and my brain, when you said map file, that just made me think about the tree in the map from Porkfest. And we do not need
let's
to
not
rehash
go there.
That
no,
conversation.
Let's not go there. I do not want to go there.
Please, before I say something that I shouldn't say, can you read more?
Okay. All right. Okay. So some background on the Syrian, you know, thing that's going on. Okay. So the article goes on to say there was an initial assumption that President Assad would soon conclude that a propitious escape would be the wisest choice. So everybody thought that he was going to step down as the, you know, president of Syria and flee. However, the speculation never transcended a merely idle notion. Thanks to Iran, China, and Russia, Syria stood firm, and a West-prescribed recipe for the so-called peaceful transition of power never materialized in the country. Quite unexpectedly, the plans of Syrian opposition fell apart on the eve of Doha conference. The initiative, so vehemently backed by the West to form a united Syrian opposition, practically went to waste on Wednesday night as the key opposition movements from inside the country pulled out. Opposition groups were scheduled to meet in Doha, the capital of Qatar, on Thursday in order to appoint a new and strong leadership. However, three dissident bodies suddenly decided not to attend the meeting. There are too many people against this initiative for it to work out now, said a Western diplomatic source in Doha. Needless to say, the failure of the plan dealt a humiliating blow to U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who was the one to announce it so unexpectedly, as well as to Britain, which had strongly supported it. It seems that the West and its regional allies are incapable of building a united front against the government of Bashar Assad.
You know, and one thing that I find interesting is with all of the sort of unrest around the world where the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, in one way or another goes and does, you know, diplomatic relations, where she's actually preparing to step down as Secretary of State.
Right.
And, you know, she's said in the past that she would serve, you know, the 4 years. You know, I'll be Secretary of State for 4 years, whether Obama gets reelected or not. But it just seemed somewhat convenient that she's stepping down in the midst of all of these situations
in which conspiracies.
You would think that someone who's been dealing with the situations should probably stay to continue dealing with the situations.
Right.
So is it that she's just saying, nope, I said I was going to do 4 years and my 4 years is up? Or is it just a convenient excuse of, oh, well, you know, I would really like to solve all of these problems, but I said I was only going to do 4 years.
Well, you know, she's got to make plans to run for president in 2016.
Yeah, that's the claim.
It's going to take her 4 years to get ready for that. So, you know, good luck, you know, Mrs. Clinton. So, whatever. I hope she's successful in whatever she chooses to do.
I don't want her to be successful because she's a tyrant. But we'll come back.
That was me being facetious.
We'll finish talking about Bashar al-Assad and other things here on Voluntary Values. Give us a call, 603-435-1105. Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And Emberly, you've been reading an article from Press TV about an interview that was on Russia Today with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
Right. It doesn't give... This article basically gives background into the Syrian debacle, or, you know, what's going on in Syria right now, the crisis. But the interview with, which they only give a few things in the beginning about the interview, things that he actually said. So I would suggest that everyone go and check out that video. You can get live stream from RT.com. So the article goes on and says, in addition to the efforts of the West and its allies to take control of Syria, there is yet another danger which gravely threatens the country to an inconceivable degree. The influx of the jihadists into the country. Last February, Al-Qaeda's leader, Ayman al-Zawahiri, who was reportedly in Jordan, called on his followers in Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey to rise up and support what he called their brothers in Syria. Also, Abu Muhammad al-Tahawi, a leading figure in Jordan's Salafi jihadist movement, told the BBC that jihad in Syria is obligatory for any able Muslim in order to help his brothers there. The fact is that the Al-Qaeda-affiliated Salafi jihadists have already swarmed into the country and are already fighting against Bashar Assad's government. Among the killed, some have been identified to belong to the Salafi cult. The grand plan is to turn Syria into a safe haven for the Salafis. Ghastly videos have recently circulated on the internet showing the Salafi jihadists beheading Syrian troops and civilians in cold blood.
Now, if you skip down a couple paragraphs, apparently there's some video images of rebels executing captured Syrian soldiers after the insurgents overran army checkpoints near the town of Sarakeb on the strategic highway linking Damascus and the port city of Latakia to Aleppo. And there's a quote here from the spokesman for the UN Human Rights Chief. Hold on. The way they have this worded, it
well,
just
the, first...
the title of Rupert Colville, it says spokesman for the UN Human Rights Chief, Navy Pillay. So it's
so the human rights chief is
here.
Navy Pillay, and the spokesman for him is Rupert Colville.
Okay. Yeah. So the quote is, this shocking footage depicts a potential war crime in progress and demonstrates an utter disregard for international humanitarian law by the armed group in question. And
that was actually Amnesty International said that.
So,
Colville said that this could amount to a war crime and that the video footage showing soldiers pushed to the ground and kicked before being shot can be presented as evidence.
Okay. Now, here's a question. This video footage of the Syrian rebels doing these things...
These are the Salafi jihadists, which are coming in from other countries.
Okay. But they're still, you know, what
Jordan
and
Turkey.
News organizations are depicting as Syrian rebels.
Right. Or the opposition movement,
right.
Or whatever they want to call them.
You know, these are definitely war crimes. But yet when Bradley Manning supposedly leaks video of American military doing the exact same thing.
Right. Wantonly
Manning
murdering.
Is thrown in jail and charged with treason.
Right. And next week we're going to devote our whole 2 hours to Bradley Manning and WikiLeaks and to all of the whistleblowers out there who are getting, you know, crapped on basically and thrown in jail and having all their rights taken away. So we'll talk all about that next week.
Right.
On a special episode.
But there's no talk of war crimes for the people that were doing the things depicted in the videos supposedly leaked by Manning.
If you or I went out and started doing these things against, say, you know, we just had enough and we decided to, you know, have our own kind of Al-Qaeda or Salafi jihadist, call it whatever you want to call it, you know, the brown-haired freaks of America, because we both have brown hair, so we'll just call it the brown-haired freaks of America, and we go out and we start executing city officials, you know, that would be what domestic terrorism and considered war crimes, that
yes.
We would be committing war crimes upon public officials.
They would actually charge us with treason, because war crimes generally requires international court. And treason doesn't, and not as much evidence is needed.
If we declared war on all public officials, that would make it a war, right?
It might be an unrecognized war.
And that would not be anything that Daryl and I would ever even think about doing.
Right.
But, you know, just for a hypothetical situation.
It's just one of those interesting things about, you know, one set of rules for us and one set for everybody else.
Right. It's a double standard kind of deal.
We'll apply the Nuremberg principles when it's convenient.
Right.
We'll apply the Geneva Convention when it's convenient.
Right.
We'll apply the Rome statutes when they're convenient.
It's all about what's good for them is not good for us.
Yeah, I just think it, you know, it's very convenient that, you know, they're saying, oh, there's war crimes in Syria. And they're basically, I think they're using it as justification for a future invasion of Syria.
Well, of course, ultimately, I believe the agenda is to take over the Middle East, have Qatar and Saudi Arabia and the United States and Israel control all of the Middle East.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got Afghanistan and Iraq with who's in the middle there? Iran. You know, and then all these other countries.
I prefer to call it Persia.
Persia, Iran, you know, same difference, whatever. Float your boat. You know, you can call it what you want. I've heard Iranians, you know, refer to Iran as Persia and as Iran. So, yeah, whatever. Anyway, this is a pretty big deal that's happening in Syria, not to mention what's happening in Libya or the drone bombings in Yemen. Totally unprovoked, as far as I know, U.S. drone bombings in Yemen, which over the weekend killed people, or actually the day after the election.
Well, there were drone bombings probably the weekend before. U.S. military has been using drones in Yemen for a while now. And as Scott Horton has said, you know, basically whenever they kill anybody that's over the age of 10, they call that person an insurgent. Oh, we killed some insurgents.
Right. As if 10-year-olds, you know yeah. that what they're doing.
And
you know?
I read an article a couple weeks ago, and I actually did not read the entire article. I read the first paragraph of the article, then got so disgusted that I had to put the newspaper down.
Yeah.
It was about something that the military is calling double tap.
Oh, that sounds bad.
Where what they will do, they'll use the drone, fire one missile into a building that they believe, you know, some Al-Qaeda leader is in.
A nursery school.
Yeah, you know, just some building in which they believe that somebody that they're looking for is in. And then they wait for the entire neighborhood to come start digging for bodies in the now rubbled building. And then they drop another missile.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
And they call it double tap.
Well, that's
such a nice, pleasant name for mass murder.
Can we not say that word anymore? My stomach just lurched and I wanted to let go of everything that I've eaten today.
And then, you know, they also use the term collateral damage. Oh, it's just collateral damage.
Well, it's always just collateral damage. I mean, please. Children.
They use all these terms to make it sound like it's not murder.
Of course, because when the state does it, it's not murder. It's just like the death penalty. The death penalty is nothing but state-sanctioned murder.
Yeah.
I mean, you're killing someone against their will, you know, so these drone attacks.
They consented. The people on death row consented to be murdered because they murdered somebody else.
Right. Okay.
And, you know, then you've got some crazy wackos that are calling for the death penalty for anybody found possessing marijuana.
Nice. Yes, and they're probably, you know,
Newt Gingrich.
Christians.
Yeah, Newt Gingrich when he was running.
He's gone off the deep end. He's a psycho. What do you expect? He wants to go live.
Of course he's a psycho.
He wants to go live on Mars. Let him go live on Mars. I will pay for him to go live on Mars. Let's do up a collection to send Newt Gingrich and all his followers to Mars.
I'll donate $3.
I will donate $3 if every American donates $3. Wow.
How much money would it take to get Newt Gingrich to Mars?
I don't know, but I'm sure that that would be enough.
So it would take a lot of extra fuel. So living on Mars, and then maybe Mars could secede from the U.S.
Let's hope so.
And we'll actually be talking about secession coming up in the next hour.
Nice.
You're listening to Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network with Daryl and Emberly. Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is hour number two, the final hour of the live show. Live every Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on LRN.FM. Be sure to watch the webcam while we're live and chat with Emberly. Give us a call at 603-435-1105. And like our Facebook page, facebook.com/voluntaryvalues. And visit the website, voluntaryvalues.com.
Yes, we have some interesting information on voluntaryvalues.com. So make sure you go to the website and check it out. And now we're going to talk about a petition for New Hampshire to secede from the union.
Now, I have questions about this petition. And I actually have questions about all of the petitions that are up on petitions.whitehouse.gov, where it says that a petition needs 25,000 signatures in order for the Obama administration to review it. So
to review, and wow, the deadline's coming up really fast for this petition.
You have 1 month to collect signatures.
Oh, they only give you 1 month
total?
They
only give you 1 month, and you need 25,000, and then the administration only reviews it. There's no guarantee that there will be any kind of action or response given.
Do you really think that the White House and is going to give us, the residents of any particular state, the ability to secede? They're going to grant us permission? I don't think we need their permission to secede. Seriously. So this petition is a little silly, and I believe it is a joke. From the feed that I saw on Facebook where I pulled this from, there was some comments by the creator of the petition that it's really just a joke. So I don't know how serious this petition is, but it already has 14 signatures. So, and only like three of them are from New Hampshire. The rest are from other states.
Right. And if you actually go to petitions.whitehouse.gov, it will show you initially 20 petitions, and then you can click to see 20 more. And they're listed, you know, like these are the latest petitions.
Well,
so of the 20 most recent petitions, 19 of them are from various states.
Are we talking about like state governments asking, or
no, just individuals?
Individual citizens.
Right. So
of that particular geographic area.
The first one listed is peacefully grant the state of Missouri to withdraw from the United States of America and create its own new government. And then the next one, same wording, but for Tennessee. And then there's Michigan, South Carolina.
So maybe we should, maybe members of the Free State Project should put together one of these White House petitions to secede.
That's the one you're talking about.
Right. But it says to govern themselves as they choose. I like that. Because this one says allow the people of New Hampshire to peacefully secede from the United States and govern themselves as they choose. You know, I know you said the other state asked that they be able to set up their own government.
Right. Oregon says allow Oregon to vote on or leave the union peacefully and remain an ally to the nation.
Oh, come on, Colorado.
That was Oregon. Let me see.
Oh, Oregon. I'm sorry. I got Colorado on the brain.
Let me see. Colorado's
Dreaming
is the
of
same
Denver.
Wording as the Missouri and Tennessee. So it's an interesting concept, but realistically, by signing this petition, it is basically a practice in futility.
Right. But it's nice to see that, you know, individuals are actually letting the United States government know that they don't want to be a part of what the United States government is doing.
Right.
You know, I mean, so while it is kind of futile.
Petitioning for redress is futile.
Right. Right. While it might seem futile, it sends a message, though. You know, it sends a message to President Obama and all of those other people up there that think that they know what's best for us, that there are people out there. And the more people who sign these petitions, you know, shows them, hey, there are people that want to be left alone, you know, left alone. And so I've actually pulled up an article from theexaminer.com, 15 states, including Texas, have filed a petition to secede from the United States. So as of Saturday, November 10th, 15 states have petitioned the Obama administration for withdrawal from the United States of America in order to create its own government. I guess these are the ones that have actually fulfilled all their petition signers.
No, these are the ones that have at least 150 signers to appear on the front page.
I got you.
That's why the New Hampshire one isn't shown yet, is because it doesn't have 150 signatures.
So states following this action include Louisiana, Texas, Montana, North Dakota, Indiana, Mississippi, Kentucky, North Carolina, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, New Jersey, Colorado, Oregon, and New York. These states have requested that the Obama administration grant a peaceful withdrawal from the United States. They were filed just days after the 2012 presidential election. Louisiana was the first state to file a petition a day after the election by Michael E. from Slidell. Texas was the next state to follow by Micah H. from Arlington, Texas. The government allows 1 month from the day the petition is submitted to obtain 25,000 signatures in order for the Obama administration to consider the request, just as Daryl was saying. The U.S. continues to suffer economic difficulties stemming from the federal government's neglect to reform.
You're now reading the Texas petition.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped something, didn't I?
It says the Texas petition reads as follows.
Oh, yep. I did skip that part. The citizens of the U.S. suffer from blatant abuses of their rights, such as the NDAA, the TSA, etc., given that the state of Texas maintains a balanced budget and is the 15th largest economy in the world. It is practically feasible for Texas to withdraw from the union, and to do so would protect its citizens' standard of living and resecure their rights and liberties in accordance with the original ideas and beliefs of our founding fathers, which are no longer being reflected by the federal government.
Okay. Now, here's an interesting question about this petition from Texas. When they say founding fathers. Well, because Texas was not one of the original 13 colonies.
Right.
Which means that they have a slightly different set of founding fathers, because Texas was, in fact, an independent nation for several years.
Right.
Before becoming part of the United States.
Right.
So are they talking about the values of Sam Houston and David Bowie and Davy Crockett? Or are they talking about the values of whoever the Mexican president was that created the state of Texas? Or are they talking about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton?
Well, they're probably talking about George Washington and et al., that group of people who are so revered in this country for what? I mean, they gave us the Constitution. Yeah, they say that they liberated us from England, but I don't know about that. I mean, I've read some interesting books here of late that don't quite agree with the notion that the Revolutionary War was, in fact, fought for, you know, independence, that we never truly became independent of England, and that we're still just a colony, really, of England. So there's some that put that out there.
I would say now that England is more a colony of the U.S.
Could be. And a lot of it stems from the banking institutions. And so these things that I've been reading have had something to do with, you know, how the banking institution is set up.
Okay. So they're looking at it more from the conspiratorial aspect of this guy who happened to be British, who convinced the, you know, King of England to set up the Bank of England, and then later had a relative come to the U.S. and was part of the group that got the Congress to create the Federal Reserve.
Something like that. Some of them are just weird.
You know, some of those conspiracy theories even go on to say that because one guy was Jewish, that all Jews own the money control. So a lot of it, take it with a grain of salt.
Next up, we're going to talk about New Hampshire state troopers deploying to New Jersey.
Actually, I want to talk about the secession just a little bit more.
Okay, sounds good.
So we'll be back momentarily with Voluntary Values. Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is Daryl.
And this is Emberly.
And we've been talking about secession and specifically these petitions that people have filed on petitions.whitehouse.gov. And I'm skeptical about the whole filing a petition on the White House website. For multiple reasons.
Well, for those who want to work within the system, you know, to make a statement, it makes a good statement, I think.
Somewhat. I would actually, if I'm going to file a petition for redress, which I have done several times, I prefer to hand in physical pieces of paper with physical signatures that were collected on it. And, you know, it's always been for, you have violated this law or you have violated this section of the Constitution. Please, you know, explain your action sort of thing. And, of course, you know, I never get a response because the Supreme Court has ruled that while you have the right to petition for redress, the government is not required to answer your petitions.
Right. They don't have to answer anything that they don't want to.
Right.
They are not to be held accountable.
But as far as for secession, that is something that should be handled at the local level.
You know, well, that I agree.
Lobby your state legislators to introduce legislation to secede. There are some states, and I don't know which ones off the top of my head, mm-hmm. where you can actually get legislation introduced through like it's not the initiative process where it takes thousands of signatures to get it on the general ballot, mm-hmm. but you can actually get legislation introduced if you do have a certain number of signatures and then hand it to your state legislator and say, here's this piece of legislation that I wrote up and here's these signatures that I got. You must now introduce this. So, you know, secession, it should be handled at the local level instead of, why not start a petition, send it to the UN and say, UN, make the U.S. government allow me to secede. You know, so it's completely backwards.
Well, right. I understand what you're saying, and I agree that secession should be handled at the local level. You know, I do agree with that. And it starts, you know, in your household. It starts first in your head,
right.
Then in your home, then in your neighborhood, then in your town or city. And it spreads from there, just like pretty much everything does.
Yeah, like,
but
I
think it sends a clear message that if all, you know, what if all 50 states, somebody in all 50 states sent, you know, and got the required petition
and assuming that the 25,000 signatures weren't all from the same people that signed 50 different petitions.
Well, I might go on there and sign all 50 just because it would be funny.
Right. But I'm just saying, you know, if it's only 25,000 people that are signing all 50 petitions.
Do it every month, though. If you're going to commit to sending a message to the White House, then somebody in all 50 states needs to, I mean, there should be like a national committee for secession and somebody holding accountable all these people in every, one person in each state.
There's actually a convention
holding
every
a petition,
year.
Having a petition every single month, the first day of the month, and getting all 25,000 signatures each month, every month of every year. And just keep it going and keep it going and keep it going.
That'll
and keep
last
it going.
For 3 months. I know how people get burned. That'll last for 3 months.
But it would send a clearer message than just arbitrarily doing it, picking some month
right.
to do it. Unless you picked a secession month.
Right.
And then everybody did it then.
July.
Yeah.
Yeah, but my thinking on this, when the 13, you know, the first 13 states, or, you know, they were colonies at the time, when they seceded from, you know, the British crown, they didn't go to the British crown and say, British crown, please let us leave. They said, no, hey, check this out, George. Bye. Here's right. our divorce papers.
Right.
You know, so it was done
locally.
Yeah,
maybe we should change it from secession to divorce.
That's basically what it is.
I think people might be able to understand that a little better. And, you know, you could just divorce your state from the federal government.
That's basically what it is.
So,
and then the federal government is the abusive spouse that says, no, right. We're not. If
oh, we
I
could
can't
take
have
them to
you,
court.
Nobody can.
Right. We could take them to court in marital court and take them to court and say that the state
is
abusive. Is
divorce court still on the air?
I don't know. I don't
Do
really,
you remember that TV show, Divorce Court?
No.
It was one of the midday court shows, but it was all about divorces.
No, I worked during the day.
Okay, well, you were a child roughly the same time I was.
We weren't allowed to watch TV.
You didn't get to watch TV when you got home from school. Okay.
For a long time, we didn't even own a TV. For most of my childhood, we did not have a TV in our house.
Okay. But there
I had
used
to read
There
books.
Used to be this show called Divorce Court. So maybe, you know, we could set something up like that and the citizens of New Hampshire could take the federal government to divorce court.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, and there's actually, there are several groups within New Hampshire that are advocating secession.
And Daryl is a co-founder of one of those groups.
The New Hampshire Liberty Party is...
And I am a member.
Yes. You were actually the vice presidential nominee.
And I got at least... 3 votes in New Hampshire.
The
Yay
Secretary
for me.
Of State assures me that they will be breaking down all write-in votes at a later
so
date.
So watch out, VP. I was hot on your tail there, Biden.
But yeah, so there's the New Hampshire Liberty Party, which is an actual political party in New Hampshire advocating secession. In Vermont, there's a secessionist party, but New Hampshire also has there's a sort of think tank that has started up. They officially kick off next week. It is the New Hampshire Independence Institute, I believe is the name of it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, there are secessionist groups. And then there's even...
I got an invitation
to something. The Shire Society.
I love the Shire Society.
Which is not necessarily so much a secessionist group as much as it is, hey, you know what? We're setting up our own society within the territory claimed by the state of New Hampshire.
Yes, and I agree with that.
And it's perfectly legal based on Article 10 of the New Hampshire State Constitution that says that people have the right to alter or abolish their governments.
So this is not what I thought it was, but somebody has done a New Hampshire Independence Party. On Saturday the 17th at 9 o'clock.
That's an actual party.
That's a party, not a political party.
Yeah. They are not political at all. They are just party. We need to go have a party.
Okay, so that's not what I thought then.
No.
Okay, never mind.
And that party was actually set up by a friend of yours.
Yes. James Copley.
Well, I wasn't going to say his name to protect the innocent.
He's not innocent. What are you talking about?
But it's basically, it's a party.
He just wants
it's not
to party.
A political party. So, what are your thoughts on secession? And what's the next topic?
Next topic is New Hampshire state troopers deployed in New Jersey.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that and more. Welcome back to Voluntary Values on the Liberty Radio Network. You can watch the webcam online during the live show at LRN.FM. And we are live every Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And Emberly, you have an interesting story about what is possibly, well, I was going to say a violation of posse comitatus, but that actually got repealed a few years ago.
Yes, it sure did.
And these actually aren't military, but they're sending state troopers from New Hampshire to New Jersey.
Right.
And I'm sure that that probably violates some law somewhere.
But it's the government doing it, so it doesn't really matter. Okay, so this is from WMUR.com. New Hampshire has sent some of its finest to help with the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy.
But I'm still here in New Hampshire.
I know, so am I. And Ian's
so
still here.
Ian, yeah.
Gosh.
And all of the Shire sharing people are still
here. Right. A dozen New Hampshire state troopers will be working with other law enforcement in New Jersey as the state tries to rebuild. Oh, so they'll take Leo's, but they won't take workers, utility workers from Alabama. Shame on you, New Jersey. I'm still angry about that whole situation. Shame on you, New Jersey.
And I don't know if New Jersey has done this, but I know New York City has. They actually turned away food donations from Red Cross because they could not check the salt and fat content.
Oh, shame on you, New York. Shame on you. Oh, my goodness. Ugh. So the group of New Hampshire state troopers wasted no time stuffing vehicles with supplies, some donated by the Boy Scouts. Oh, the Boy Scouts. And headed out prepared to help in any way. The troopers arrived in the Garden State early Saturday night. "We're proud to be there," said Major Russell Conti, who was leading the group. Governor John Lynch on Friday ordered the troopers to be deployed to help with law enforcement efforts in battered areas of New Jersey. The decision came days after he deployed members of the state's National Guard to aid the post-Sandy recovery. Conti said the troopers selected have experience when it comes to handling crisis situations. Well, I would hope so. I mean, they're state troopers, right? Aren't they like taught and schooled in handling crises and emergencies?
No, they're taught and schooled in how to pull people over, harass them for violations that have no victim.
Oh, yeah.
And then if somebody doesn't do or say what you tell them to do, you either pepper spray them or tase them.
Have there been tasings and pepper sprayings here in New Hampshire?
I know there have been pepper sprayings. I'm not. I'm fairly certain someone in New Hampshire has been tased.
Well, I'm sure.
But Derek J was actually pepper sprayed in the Live Free or Dance.
That's right.
And when we had the one-year anniversary.
That was a scummy move by that police officer, too.
Yes.
Just absolutely ridiculous.
And when I threw the Live Free or Dance 2,
this time we danced. We did dance.
And I know I told several people, I said, I am prepared to be handcuffed, tased, and pepper sprayed tonight.
Gosh, that's kind of hot, Daryl.
None of which actually happened.
None of which happened.
Despite my repeated request, you did not do any of those, Amberly. It hurt me deeply.
So sorry, Daryl. You should have written it down and sent it in a note because I didn't get the message.
No, so I was fully prepared to, you know, get pepper sprayed and tased. And
right.
Luckily, the cops came. They said,
they're really nice.
Oh, yeah. You guys are leaving in 10 minutes. Yeah. All right. That's fine. Just
make sure
have a good one.
That you have your dance party before 10 p.m.
Yeah. And then I actually looked. There's a sign inside Ashuelet Park where we were that says park hours close 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. except for bike path.
And we were on the bike path.
We were on the bike path.
So, therefore, actually, when we have another...
Technically, everything we did was legal.
So, the next time we have a Live Free or Dance, we need to say, we're on the bike path.
Yeah, we're on the bike
path. Maybe we should all bring our bikes and do bike dancing.
I want a unicycle.
We could dance with our bikes. Okay, now we're descending again into silliness. It's going to be another wheels off voluntary values episode if we're not careful.
I want my unicycle.
Okay, so the troopers will be gone for at least 8 days. Darn, I thought they were staying forever. As soon as they entered New Jersey, they hit the ground running, ready to aid local law enforcement and the thousands of people in need. We just want to help with the relief efforts, Conti said. We want to be part of that solution. In addition to New Hampshire, law enforcement officers from as far as Oklahoma have also been dispatched to New Jersey and the New York area to lend a helping hand.
Okay, so here's a very serious question.
Yep.
And I don't know if you have the answer. I don't know if any of our listeners has the answer. Why do they always go to the police and the National Guard after any kind of natural disaster?
Because they'd be schooled in how to handle that kind of stuff.
Right,
you know, us poor ignorant, why, you know, citizens, we don't know how to do that. We don't know how to handle ourselves.
Like, Doctors Without Borders.
Well,
and I know that they have
aren't
helped.
Aren't they international, though?
Most of the things that they do are international.
Well, but yeah, I you're know saying that they turned away Red Cross food donations
right,
in New York.
That's what I'm saying. You know, there are private charities that are willing and able to go assist, but they are turned away by the government.
That's because they want to keep their monopoly.
They would rather have the National Guard,
right,
who are trained to shoot things and blow things up.
Right.
To go
part-time, anyway.
Keep order.
Right. They're there to keep order. They're not really there to help with the
the
cleanup effort.
There's a lot of violence in Washington, D.C. Why don't we send the National Guard into D.C. to keep order?
Well,
there's violence in South Central L.A. Let's send the National Guard.
That's because the violence in Washington, D.C. is perpetrated by people who have lots of money.
No, I meant the other violence,
the murders. The other side of D.C.
The murders, the gang
fun
violence.
Side.
Yeah. You know, the part that doesn't make you want to vomit when you get there.
I believe it's because the government wants to keep their monopoly on, crisis handling. And so they do that by not letting voluntary or, you know, mutual aid societies in to help.
They want to
instead force, you know, other states to send in government employees,
right,
and government workers to do the work.
I remember after 9/11, the Red Cross having so much money in donations, they did not know what to do with it.
And then their hands were tied and they weren't allowed to do anything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's typical of our government.
Similar situations when Katrina happened. You
right.
know, the Red Cross had tons of donations.
Speaking of that,
they went down and they were actually turned away from entering New Orleans.
Well, after the whole Katrina thing went down, and I wish I could remember what the name of that book was, but I have on Amazon, I'll have to look it up later, and I'll post it on voluntaryvalues.com. There is a book that somebody sent to me, a link from Amazon, that talks about voluntary anarchic associations post Katrina, and how voluntary associations went down there and rebuilt New Orleans.
Yeah.
After the, you know, military and the police and the government workers left, because they left it a bloody mess down there and they didn't care about those people.
Right.
And it's really obvious that they don't care.
One thing that I find very interesting, especially about Katrina, is that Mississippi was actually devastated worse than New Orleans was.
Yes, my cousin had a house in Mississippi and it was completely destroyed.
But because Mississippi didn't have the population that New Orleans did, and Mississippi isn't 8 foot under sea level right next to an ocean.
Right.
Which why anybody would build a city there anyway is beyond me. But Mississippi actually rebuilt much better and much faster with private donations.
Yep.
They didn't wait on FEMA.
When we come back, we're going to talk about police efforts to end prostitution and drugs with a creepy new spy mobile. So look forward to that in the next segment. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Voluntary Values. This is the final segment of the show. And we are live every Sunday from 3 to 5. So if you're listening and it's not Sunday between 3 and 5 Eastern Time,
don't call
then me. You're listening to a replay. And now you know when you can listen to us live. You can always view the webcam when we are live on LRN.FM, chat with Emberly. And now, Emberly, you have something very important to tell us.
I do. Have you heard about Taryn P. Lupo's new book, One Nation Under Blood? When a rejuvenative blood technology is developed that pits the young against the old, the government must take firm steps to address the war of supply and demand brewing across generational lines. Blood is not the only thing bought and sold in this dystopian tale of technology, economics, and independence. Vampires are now very real, but we never expected them to wear our grandmother's best Sunday dress. You can find it now at any major online retailers. And it's a great book, so I suggest you go out and get it. Read it and share it. Okay, so I know this is our last segment, and I wanted to get to the story, but we have a lot of events coming up. So How much time do we have left?
We have enough time for you to read all of the events and then possibly discuss something.
Okay.
For 3 minutes.
So tomorrow we have a Veterans Day peace rally at Central Square in Keene, New Hampshire at 10 a.m. So if you can make it out to that, that'd be wonderful, to have a peace rally on veterans. Well, what's ostensibly today's Veterans Day, but tomorrow is the
observation
of it. On Wednesday, November 14th, there's a hearing on the motion to dismiss the court trespass order for Ian Freeman. That's Wednesday the 14th at Keene District Court at 9 a.m. On Saturday, November 17th, Shire Sharing Thanksgiving Prep Party. You need to contact Amanda Bolden for more information. And I believe you can get that on shiresharing.com.
And Amanda will actually be on the show the Sunday after Thanksgiving to talk about the success that
she's
Shire
been on,
Sharing
she's
is.
Been on the show before. Not the show. I'm sorry. She was on my Voluntary as Volunteers, my other show that I used to do. And then Shire Sharing Delivery Day is going to be Sunday, November 18th, all day. Also contact Amanda to get information on where that's going to be held and where you need to be. Saturday, November 24th, there's the nationwide End the Fed, End the Wars rally at every Federal Reserve Bank across the nation.
The closest one to Keene, New Hampshire would be Boston.
So I'm sure there's going
to
be one.
Which require people to go to Boston.
Beautiful city.
Boston is a beautiful city completely surrounded by the fascism that is Massachusetts.
That's true. That's very true. And upcoming February 21st to the 24th, 2013, is the Liberty Forum, which is a yearly event put on by the Free State Project at the Crown Plaza. Freudian slip there, people. Crown Plaza in Nashua, New Hampshire.
And the New Hampshire Liberty Party's annual convention actually takes place the same time as the
Liberty Forum. And where's that going to be held at? In Nashua?
It's going to be somewhere in the same hotel.
Nice. Okay, so you'll have the New Hampshire Liberty Party convention as well.
The way we're setting up the convention is the convention will be held after, it'll be in the evening after all of the regularly scheduled.
So you're going to cut into my drinking time then.
You can drink during the convention. There's no you have to be sober rule in the New Hampshire Liberty Party.
All right. Well, if you're
fairly
for succession,
certain that I
succession.
Was not sober during the foundation party or foundation convention. Well, what's the thing called? Yeah, the formational convention.
I think I was at that event as well, and I think I had a few drinks.
No, you weren't there.
Aw.
It was me, Ian, and Conan.
I thought that was done at Social Sunday. I was there.
Another thing that was
Whatever.
Done at Social
okay,
Sunday.
Okay, fine. I wasn't there. Whatever. And I'm excited to announce an event that I will be speaking at. Anarchy in New York City on April 20th, 2013. Actual time of the event is,
to
I believe,
be determined.
It's in the afternoon, 3 to 10, I believe. But the exact place has not been determined yet.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, hey, if there's any bands out there, hint, hint, Rebel Inc.
Jordan Page.
Tatiana
Morose.
The lovely band that played at Free Keene Fest that their name is escaping me at the moment.
I don't remember.
Well, we'll get back to you guys. Hopefully you're not listening and won't get upset with us that we don't remember, especially since I booked you and I can't
remember. I don't
remember
what I ate for lunch yesterday and you want me to remember a band
anyway,
name
Anyway, that's
going to
be the Anarchy in New York City event. Is going to be a lot of fun. I'm on the slate to speak with Stefan Molyneux and
Or as
Michael,
Jamie Crane calls him, Stefan Molyneux.
And Michael Shanklin, who I used to have a radio show with Voluntary as Volunteers with Michael Shanklin. So it'll be fun to stand up on stage with those guys.
And then depending upon my availability, I may possibly be a speaker that is not
confirmed yet.
That'd be wonderful.
Right. And Voluntary Values is going to have a table as well at that event. So as you know, the day draws closer, we'll have more information on that one. So it's going to be a great event.
And that's also April 20th. That's 420.
That's 420.
So I'm proposing, Ian Ciofi, if you are listening to this right now and you would like to take some advice, since that is 420, let's have a giant 420 rally in Times Square.
Awesome. Make it at noon, because we'll already be there.
On 420. It's got to be on 420. No, the time. The 420 rally is supposed to be at 420.
Oh, that's right. All right, well, that's a great thing. Let's get to this last story. Do we have time to squeeze it in?
You've got 2.5 minutes.
Okay. So, police to end prostitution and drugs with creepy new spy mobile. Floridians will have to look elsewhere to buy sex and drugs. Damn it. Looking for hookers or drugs? From now on, avoid St. Pete, Florida, whose police force plans to eradicate both forever with the deployment of their new armored spy vehicle. The truck has 4 cameras mounted behind bulletproof glass, protecting officers from any armed prostitutes who get funny ideas about their privacy rights. An angry gremlin painted on the side of the truck warns prospective buyers of sex or drugs, "We are watching you." And it's a very funny picture. If you go to alternet.org and look up the new creepy new spy mobile, it's pretty funny looking.
Now, here's something that's interesting. You're reading about down in Florida, they're trying to make it harder to identify or harder to, you know, be a sex worker. And
or
in
a drug
Spain,
worker.
They're actually making it easier to identify the prostitutes.
How's that? Are they giving them cards or tattoos or what?
Making them wear yellow vests so that they do not get hit by traffic.
Well, safety first.
Right. So basically, now, if you're looking for a prostitute in Spain, instead of just, you know, approaching some woman and saying, "Hey, can I give you some money and you do this?" Now you know who to go ask because they're wearing
right.
a uniform.
They're right. And soon they'll be unionized and put into the fold of the Spanish government, and there'll be a whole prostitution.
They might already be unionized.
They might be a part of the Spanish government.
Yeah.
You just never know.
Florida. I forget what country.
All of their senators, all
Sweden?
Their legislators are already whores anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
I think it's Sweden where the prostitutes actually are unionized.
Well, way to go, Sweden. What's wrong with sex? What's wrong with it?
As George Carlin said, sex
States?
Is legal.
Right.
Selling is legal. Why isn't selling sex legal?
It's ridiculous that we are so hung up on prostitution and using drugs. You know what? Get over it. It's a body.
What?
I can use it how I want to. If I can get married and have sex with my husband, isn't that like the same thing as selling my body to anybody else?
And I've actually heard people go one step further of where they make deals with their husband of, "I will provide this, this, and this on these days.
For this.
In exchange for I don't have to work and you do this, this, and this. And if I give you extra sex, then I get jewelry or I get this or I get that."
I think I know who said that, but I won't speak any names.
I honestly don't remember who said that.
I think I do.
But I've heard about those sort of arrangements.
That's fine. Marriage is a contract anyway.
True.
So if you're going to have a contract, you might as well write in all those things.
Well, what is the difference? And I should say, what is the moral difference between prostitution and picking up a woman at the bar?
None.
And having a one-night stand.
There's none. Well, it's like somebody sent me a picture a while back that said, "What's the difference between a prostitute and a model?" Nothing really. Hey, make sure that you like us on Facebook. Check out the website, voluntaryvalues.com. And we'll see you next week for a special episode on Bradley Manning and WikiLeaks. Peace and love to you all.
Be back next week and listen to Voluntary Values on LRN.FM.